Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for June 2nd, 2008, and on this episode we have an interview with playwright Brett Nevue. Need I say more? You are in for a treat. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, Chicago, and let's talk theater.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our special guest this week is one of the busiest playwrights around, a person who's had several productions here in Chicago, who has a new world premiere at the Goodman Theater. Say hello to Brett Nevue.
Hey, everybody. How you doing?
Tell us about Gas for Less. And by the way, I have to ask you right off the bat, when I saw the promo and the logo, Gas for Less, There was a station somewhere on Lincoln Avenue.
Lincoln and Berteaux. It's actually inspired by that station. The play originally was commissioned by North Light Theater. I had gotten a commission. I had talked to B.J. Jones down there, and I said that I wanted to write a play about a gas station. This specific gas station being the inspiration for it. And thinking they would say, no, you can't write a play about a gas station. I sort of threw it out there, and BJ said, yeah, go for it. So I told him a little bit about what I wanted it to be about. He had me go write it, and I came back with it. But certainly, yeah, it was inspired by the station on Lincoln Berteaux completely, and the people that worked there, and the troubles that it had around in 2005 and its subsequent closing.
Wow. So what can we expect?
Well, it's something that I can give you a little bit.
Yeah, tell us enough to get people to want to come see
sure.
it without giving away some okay. of the cool parts.
The play is a really sort of Chicago centered play. Something that I haven't really ever done before. The structure of it is the first act takes place. During a Chicago Bears game in the early season in 2005, and then the second act takes place at another Chicago Bears game in the latter half of the season. And so you hear the game, because every time I would go into the Gas for Less on Lincoln and Berteaux, they would be watching some sports or some or other, and I always watch it at a little TV on top of a cooler.
I'm sure if it wasn't the Bears, it would be the Cubs,
It'd be the Cubs, yeah. Or it would be the Bulls, it'd be something. Okay. And so that became a big part of the play, and also the station and its vibe felt very Chicago to me, and I'd gone there. I'd lived about three blocks from there when I first moved to town back in 1994, and so it was one of the sort of things in the neighborhood. There wasn't a ton over there when I moved to the neighborhood, but that was a place you could go and.
It's a well-known old. It's like a link to the past in Chicago.
A link to the past, exactly right. And the old pumps and the old sign and everything like that. And they did have gas for less. They had the cheapest gas in the neighborhood. And so I would go there even when I moved out of the neighborhood, just a little south or whatever, moved all over town. And I would still come back to that gas station because I liked the way – I liked the people who worked there, and I liked just the vibe of the place. And so – in 2005, when I went to go get gas there, they were closed, and I was really surprised. I didn't know what happened, and I asked around. A friend of mine who owns a video store in the neighborhood, I asked him what had happened, and he had heard that they'd closed because they couldn't afford gas anymore, and that sort of surprised and saddened me that something like that would shut down a place that became where relationships were formed and sort of a place that defined the center of the neighborhood. It's in North Center, and I always felt like that was the center of North Center.
Yeah, so it's kind of like the small town gas station or the general store where people meet.
Exactly, and once that's gone, what happened to the people that go there? And typically with my work, I try to discuss what happens when big decisions are made. When decisions are made elsewhere by people in either government or whatever, and how that then trickles down and affects in just day-to-day people, and what happens to those folks that were hanging out at that gas station, what happens to the folks that own the gas station, what happens to their families, what happens after that. And basically that's what the play's about. What happens when hard times hit, when they hit just regular folk.
So carries through some of the characters.
Well, there's the kid who's working there, who's the grandson of the owner of the station. This guy Anthony's 25, and he loves working at this place. He probably should have gone to school, but he really enjoys what it used to be and what he feels like it still is. And he likes going there and watching games and working there. It's a pretty good life. And then there's a guy that hangs out there, Pat, who comes in. He's been going there to this gas station for 44 years and just hanging out and watching any sports it's on, you know, playing lotto, whatever. And so they have a camaraderie there. And the thing I was talking about, the purpose of the station as a place where relationships maintain, those guys sort of form that. And then there's the owner of the station, Art. And he is in a bit of panic mode. He doesn't exactly know what to do. He loves the station and loves the people that come, but he knows what the reality of the station is.
And economics are forcing him out.
Economics are forcing him to try to figure out what to do with his station. It's a, you know, it's a family owned, independently owned gas station in the
so world. he's not affiliated with Shell or any of the big.
Exactly. He's just like a very small amount of stations that are here in town. Geez, I don't even know any I can think of on the north side right now.
There was one on Damon and Roscoe, but I think that's affiliated with somebody now.
I think you're right.
I think they're pretty much all.
And there
gone.
Was one on Lawrence too, like Lawrence and Lawrence and Damon around there. Same thing, and now it's probably a condo now. I think it is a condo now, but and so there's that, and then there's customer Benji and then another guest, station owner Bilal, that sort of play into the world of it too, and how they're being affected and things
so
like that.
So is this kind of a nostalgic piece in a way?
Well, only because it takes place in 2005.
Okay.
Nostalgia for 2005. I think it's mostly about, personally, it's a little about me leaving Chicago and the things that I remember most about Chicago seem to be things from so I guess it is a little bit about nostalgia from a while ago. And once those things are gone, what happens to my memories of the place? If Gas for Less is gone, it doesn't feel like Chicago to me.
And, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of us have places. I had a diner that we used to go to, 24-hour diner, mm-hmm. Off in the Belmont and Central area.
Yeah.
That everyone went to. So the Gas for Less is yours. Huh?
It was. And the cool thing that happened with the show is that the Time Out ran a little article about the play kind of early on, right when it got picked up by the Goodman. And the son of the guy who owns the station saw the article and contacted the theater and said, "Hey, that's, you know, my dad, that's my dad." Phil Berman is the guy. And he contacted the theater and said, "Hey, that's my dad's station. And we're really excited about this. And also, we have a bunch of stuff from the station if you guys want it for the show." And
wow.
So there's a lot of authentic pieces on stage from the actual station. He came in and he talked to us about what happened with Gas for Less and his dad and how the business was run and ended up actually affecting the script and affecting the way that the play felt quite a bit and how I feel about the play too.
What did he think of your script? Did he see it before?
No, he hadn't read it.
Okay.
We sent him a script just recently, maybe a couple of weeks ago, and so he got to see maybe the first, fifth of the play in rehearsal, early on in rehearsal, and he and it's strange, you know. When you're creating something, how much you're guessing at and how much is right.
Yeah, what's your batting average?
It seemed to be pretty good.
Yeah?
And I think that's just, I don't know, it's weird when those sort of things happen. It's kismet-y, you know.
I mean, you were that close, huh?
Yeah, and...
Well, it shows your perception as a writer, too.
Well, I think it might just be that it was such a clear world that Gas for Less was that it... was pretty open, and you could really garner a lot from just being there for 2-3 minutes, compounded over 13 years.
What did they, his information add to it?
There were a few lines that things that he said that his dad would say that ended up in the play. There's a few things that changed as a result of the business of running a gas station that affected the play. And I think tone-wise and the stakes of what is happening to this station were affected. I think certainly the actors can feel, and I certainly feel there's something that we need to honor when it comes to portraying this gas station that involves his dad and his family and the people.
Well, I appreciate your sensitivity for that, because as you know, sometimes writers go off and really offend the subject they're trying to help because they kind of don't know better.
Yeah, and it was mostly just, and I think somebody's asked me about this recently, and it was, I think this is also the first play I've ever written that is really about a place that was, and we're trying to capture that tone, almost the tone exactly, and inspired by a place that was. And so it was very, very strange to have the people that were there and know the place so well walking into.
Yeah, it had to be scary on one sense, but gratifying on the other when you realize how close you were to what.
Yeah, I was I was a little weirded out, but I'm sure not as weirded out at all as Phil was coming into this space with here's some folks that you know, were portraying your life in a weird way, you know, people from shadows from your past. And that must have really been something for him. I don't even know what I would think.
Well, it'll be interesting to hear what he has to say when he sees the full play. Huh?
Yeah, I am really, really interested.
So it is at the Goodman. It's in the Owen Theater.
Yep.
It opens on June 2nd for about a month run, right? And tell us some of the people that are in it, who your director is. And,
well, here, I've got my cheat sheet just
okay.
in case. Well, Dexter Bullard is directing, and he's been with the script since almost its inception. He's directed two previous readings of it, one at Northlight and then one here at the Goodman, two public readings. And then, so he's been the only director attached to this script since its beginning.
That's a new trend. I've talked to some other writers who have had the directors involved with it. You're comfortable with that?
Yeah, I think that it's the purpose of development. One of the purposes of development is to have a director that can help shape the play from the beginning.
Because you know that's a fairly new trend.
It is.
In the old days, you guys wrote the play and then you brought the director in later.
Yeah.
Sometimes after casting, sometimes.
And that sometimes still happens, but I really do prefer having someone that can be an advocate for the play, that can be have casting ideas set for a while, and you know, even begin working with some people early on to get the thing sort of rolling, and it's incentive, I think, for a theater to see there's more than one person, the person who wrote it, that's excited about the script.
Yeah, I think it makes good sense. I think that's
and the cast is absolutely great too, with I mentioned the characters with Bob Brewer, sort of a couple Chicago legends.
Bob Brewer certainly is one.
Bob Brewer and Ernest Perry Jr. People have seen both those guys everywhere, and some younger guys, Kareem Bandelay, young Nathan Davis, and a guy that I just met who's playing Anthony, the shop manager, Ryan Jarrell, who's outstanding, absolutely.
Oh yeah,
outstanding.
Well, he's been doing a lot of storefront theater and with Infamous Commonwealth and a few places. Yeah, he's an up and comer.
I think that folks, if you want to see somebody that's going to be something big sometime, you can come see this show and he will knock your socks off. He really will.
Wow, so this is a world premiere.
It's a world premiere. Yeah.
You got to be excited about
this.
It is. I mean, it's the Goodman Theater. It's one of the, you know, one of the top regional theaters in the world.
You don't need to remind me. I know. It is very exciting. I feel very, very honored. I'm cherishing every day that I'm here. It's absolutely wonderful. I'm coming from 14 years of storefront theater for me, basically.
Yeah, that's a good time to go into your background. I mean, you have tremendous credits, but it didn't happen overnight, did it?
No. I've been slogging away since I moved to Chicago in '94, doing shows at Cafe Voltaire, shows at the back of Sheffield's bar on Sheffield. Over by Wrigley Field.
That's real raw storefront.
That's real raw storefront in the back of a bar. I did a couple shows there. More than one. And certainly in the basement of Voltaire and in and on from there. But mostly a lot of storefront. I worked at and then my out of town stuff too, at Royal Shakespeare and things like that. But
that had to be an amazing experience.
That was a life changer. That was a really really.
Well, tell us about which play was it?
It was a play called Eric LaRue. It was originally produced at Red Orchid Theater, and subsequently produced in Los Angeles and then out in England. But it was a script that they'd hung on to for about 5 years. The guy who was the literary manager, Dominic Cook, at the time, he had been working at Royal Court, and he was trying to push the script, and then they said no, and so he took it with him when he got a job at Royal Shakespeare, and he hung on to it for a really long time. And then I got a call out of the blue, hey, we want to produce this play out in Stratford.
Did you think it was somebody pulling your leg?
No. Nobody could make that up.
That'd be too cruel.
That would be weird. Yeah. And so I got to go out there and spend some time in Stratford, quite a bit of time in Stratford, which was pretty incredible. And then they subsequently also produced it in the West End in London, too, about 6 months later.
Wow, what was the reaction of it at Stratford and in London?
It was pretty good. It was paired with another play by David Ogmey, and they called it Postcards from America because Eric LaRue is about an hour long, maybe 50-minute long play.
Yeah, a lot of your early works were short.
Short stuff.
Which was to your credit.
Yeah,
your story in and audiences love that.
And you know, and sort of on a sidebar thing here. That for storefront theaters, I mean, folks with not a lot of money, not a lot of time, not paying their actors, short theater or short plays are easier to produce. And so something like that would be easier to produce for something like Red Orchid because it's, you know, pretty straightforward as far as its staging and as far as its set and as far as its costumes. And I mean, if I have any advice for any young playwrights, write the small show because theaters can do those shows.
That makes good sense.
Yeah.
Because they all write that 40-character three-act play that goes
right.
4 hours.
And sometimes those get produced, but more your chances are better if you write something smaller. And I think that's one of the reasons why Royal Shakespeare picked it up because it was for a small space. They were doing new work, and it was a small space above a cafe in this long.
Did you get a chance to see him?
Oh yeah, yeah. I got to see him. I was there about a month.
Wow.
In Stratford.
That's a nice little perk.
It was very nice. And the most wonderful actors. They were all folks that were in the Shakespeare shows on the main stage.
So you had all top classical actors.
They were. And that was another sort of life changer to see these amazing actors, like working here and working at Red Orchid and working in Chicago. It felt really, really very similar.
Red Orchid, which is your home base.
Yeah, that's my home
base. I mean, they do fabulous theater.
They
really,
really do.
Tough, gritty Chicago in-your-face theater.
Yeah, and I was worried about that going out to Stratford, whether or not they would be able to sort of capture that feel. But I learning as I went that's doing Shakespeare and the mainstay of what they usually do is this gritty stuff, and so it was an easy transfer, and they really, really got it. There's a lot about class in the play, and that's one thing they really get over there is class.
Yeah, that's true. They do.
Yeah, but it was a really wonderful, wonderful experience.
So let's go back now. So you, because we jumped a little bit.
Yeah, we did.
But you did some stuff with Chicago Dramatists.
Tell
us the influence there, because a lot of people I've interviewed Russ, and a lot of people. Wonder if is that a good place as a young playwright to
I
help
think
develop.
So yeah sure I had gotten in there. Rebecca Gilman was in there at the time. I came in with Lydia Diamond and Lisa Dillman and Jenny Laird, all these
Boy, that's a nice group of you guys all did pretty well.
Yeah, and Carson Becker it was a lot of really great people. I mean, I could go on and on. There's a whole slew of folks that are being produced in Chicago and all over the country and all over the world that came out of that that crowd that I back in the late 90s when I first joined up with those guys. And it was great just to be able to have readings of my work, which was something that I was very anxious to do, to hear and change and have and work with the directors. One of the directors, Steve Scott, actually was one of the first people who directed one of my scripts.
Wow, that's terrific. Right away you're getting top people.
Yeah, and right, and here I am right back here at the Goodman where Steve works and directs. And so that sort of bridge happened early with Dramatists.
So you think that's important? So you would advise young playwrights?
Certainly. I mean, there's I think a lot more opportunities than there were for playwrights in town than there were back then. There were not too many theaters producing new work in Chicago.
Yeah, now we're getting to be the hotbed for new work. Yeah.
Definitely, especially.
And you were one of the breakthrough guys. Yeah.
Well, there are. I mean, so many, and there's so many up and comers. I mean, I look at the Reader or Time Out or whatever, and I see what theaters are producing now, and it's new play after new play after new play, and you just don't see that.
Yeah, I think I saw around 40. Brand new works last year. And at least a dozen or so this year already.
Absolutely incredible. And then the trust that the small theaters have in the playwrights that are in this town is absolutely outstanding. And also, all it does is develop skills that these theaters wouldn't normally have and these actors wouldn't normally have. And these playwrights can help. It helps build their skills too as writers and people that need to do rewrites and all the things that go into being a playwright.
So now, give us a little bit of your philosophy of playwriting. I would like to get into this because some of your early works were small town, yep. America based.
Sure.
And I think you've kind of moved beyond that.
Well, write what you know. Okay. That's what they say. Yeah. And I grew up in a small town in Iowa, this town, Newton, Iowa, which is about 30 miles east of Des Moines. And it used to be the home of Maytag, but Maytag has since closed there. So a lot of my experience and a lot of my memories, still come from there. And certainly there were things I wanted to write about, just like all writers. I want to write about this and I want to write about that. There were certain stories that I wanted to write about. And, a lot of them came from there. And I think that's where it sprung. And once I had told those stories, I had to go someplace. I had to start telling other stories. And then Chicago Bank began to influence me. My parents, my own lineage started to influence me. And then it just sort of sprang from there.
Well, one of the things that I like about is your characters. You write a lot of quirky, really off-the-wall characters.
Well, I think a lot of that comes from just trying to be really specific with the people. And I was talking to somebody yesterday about dialogue and one of the other understudies actually here. And about how to create dialogue. And I think that the character creation and dialogue creation are sort of one and the same. If you are really specific about your characters and who they are, where they came from, what they are doing with their lives, what their point of view is, then dialogue springs directly from that. Then you know how these folks are going to talk because you know how they're going to approach what somebody says to them.
And one of the other trademarks that I think you have is that you're known for the space between the words or the unspoken communication, which the actors love.
Yeah.
Which sometimes if you read a script, it sometimes doesn't read as well. But when you see it acted out with all the nuances and room for the character, for the actor to develop the character.
Yeah. And that's a blessing and a curse right there, because you send scripts out to be read by literary managers and artistic directors and whomever. And I've heard that a lot, that sometimes the scripts just don't read that well. And so what I need...
But some of the other great writers have been that way, so you're not alone with that.
And yeah. I totally agree with that. And I mean, I kind of go with the Harold Pinter aesthetic, that it's what you see on stage is what matters. And the collaboration between what's happening on stage, what's happening between the director and the writer and the designers, that is the thing that I find most interesting. And so... You know, however it reads, I don't really care. What I want to see is if it works on stage. That's most.
And that's really what counts. Yeah, because you're writing for the stage.
Exactly, writing for the stage and writing for the audience to be involved and to react and to be engaged. And if the thing that's happening on there is engaging them, then whatever the script looks like, I don't care.
Yeah. Well, in some of your works, I've noticed a social or political issues.
Yeah.
What cleverly you never preach. It's always indirect.
Well, that's mostly because I approach most of my plays with the idea that I don't know what the answer is. And that's usually why I end up writing a play in the first place, is that I sort of feel mixed about, like Ask for Less, for one. I sort of feel mixed about something, an event that happened, or the result of something. And I don't know exactly what to do. And so I let the characters inform me. These characters are going to have certain points of view. And so I say, go talk about this, and I'll sit back and watch, and I'll see how it affects me.
And how a lot of your work affects people. I remember seeing Harmless, mm-hmm. that you did at Timeline. And we were all arguing after.
Yeah.
I mean, because you laid out the themes and the dilemmas there, and you beautifully didn't answer them.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. And I mean, that leaves the audience with something to do after the show, and something to the play continues on then.
Oh, sure does. We were arguing all the way home, yeah. And the next, I mean, and that's cool. I bet you'd love to hear that.
Well, that's the point. Yeah, I mean, that's the point. So, I mean, that's the point of art anyway, is to engage and then last with the people that have come to see it. I mean, that's you hope that folks, and that's the question people say, what do you want some people to take away with this? I'm like, well, let them take away what they need to take away, what they want to take away. I hope they take something away, but they're going to have their own point of view, just like the characters on stage.
Yeah.
Their own point of view.
Weapons of Mass Impact was another one of those.
Yeah.
That you did at Red Orchid.
Yeah.
That was terrific. That we still don't know, and I'm sure you won't answer, but you know, were they really role playing, or were they being tortured?
Well, yeah. Well, you know, in a weird way, either way, whether they're role playing or they're really being tortured, they are really being tortured.
Yeah, that's true.
Or not.
That's
and I
true.
Think that what the discussion for me ended up as that it was.
Well, underlying on those, yeah. Is there a political or social agenda that you have working? You think?
Well, I'm not going to lie. I'm a pretty liberal guy, but my social agenda, I think, is just to address. This goes back to what I said before. Address what happens to if you and I are affected by big changes made elsewhere, and that is the social thing that I'm most interested in, is what happens to us and our money and our time and our families and our lives when conflict occurs that we didn't ask for, or we don't know what to do with, and how do we handle ourselves in that situation, and what happens next?
Mostly. Well, you do it beautifully through very real and truthful characters.
Well, that's what I try to do.
Yeah, and I think, and I personally think among your talents, your characterization, the characters you develop, are memorable and they're real.
That's really important to me, that I try to capture. The folks in the audience can relate to the folks on stage and back and forth, or they're seeing some people that they wouldn't normally talk to, or they're seeing into a room that they wouldn't normally be let into or want to go into. For example, like with Eric LaRue, there's a scene with the play's about, for those who don't know, the play's about the aftermath of a school shooting, and there's a scene with a pastor and the mothers of the boys who were killed. And then the mother of the boy who did the shooting, and they have a little meeting, and that's not any place any of us would like to go, would be allowed to go into,
yeah.
Or probably a meeting that should have never happened. But there we are with them, watching.
Yeah,
in the same room.
That was powerful.
And something like that is really exciting to me, to be able to engage an audience and okay, we're here. We're all gonna look at this and see what happens.
Yeah. Well, tell us what you have going now. I mean, after Gas for Less opens, I know you're a busy guy.
I go back home to Los Angeles and take it easy for a while. I have a show at Writers Theater coming up next season, a play called Old Glory, directed by Bill Brown. And
by Bill Brown?
Yeah, and it's the third part in the trilogy of Harmless, Weapon of Mass Impact, and Old Glory, which is
okay.
A trilogy called Trilogy 04, 05, 06. And so that is coming up.
That's major. I mean, a major theater group and a major director.
And that was a commission by them, too. So they're producing.
Yeah, I want to mention it. You're getting a lot of commissions.
I am. I'm a little wonderfully overwhelmed, which is very, very nice.
That's a two-edged sword, right?
I mean,
you're getting actually money up front or money
yes.
To develop. Does that put pressure on you?
It doesn't. The theaters are really great in that they allow me whatever time I need to write the plays. Like I have a commission from Royal Court right now that I'm finishing up. I'm through the first act and I'm getting into that. But I've had it for a while because in the meantime I've moved and had a baby and all this other stuff.
Life goes on.
Life goes on. And so it does get a little overwhelming, but good overwhelming.
Well, yeah, I would think so because at least you have the confidence of knowing that something's going to happen with it.
It's nice to be asked.
Yeah, right.
Mostly.
But you're getting asked a lot.
I am getting asked a lot, and it's very helpful. And my wife appreciates.
Do they give you an outline of what they want, or?
No, typically, like Ask for Less, I just come and I say, this is sort of what I'd like to write about, and sometimes there's a little suggestions or questions about what it is, but mostly it's go for it, and then I just write the first draft, and then we go from there.
So it's obviously the fact they're coming to you, they have the confidence knowing or at least predicting that what you're going to write is going to be good.
That's typically it, is that they're more interested in the writer than they are what the writer is going to produce. And so they just ask for that. Sometimes theaters say, well, here's what we'd like it to be. So what we're like, if it's for an ensemble, you have to consider the ensemble. If I've written a couple of scripts for Steppenwolf and I have to consider the ensemble when I do that. And for Red Orchid the same way.
But, I mean, as long as it's not too – as long as it's general enough, mm-hmm. you can still – it still gives you room to be creative.
They all know what I write – the kind of things I write about. And so that they're going to get a play by me no matter what.
All right. Last question.
Sure.
Where do you see yourself 4 or 5 years from now? Or what is –
hopefully.
Is there a big play in you that just has to come out?
This might be it.
Okay.
This might be the big play. This is the – I think that this play, actually, Gas for Less, is a big turning point for me, actually. And its ability to capture the characters that I typically write about, but on a sort of a grander – not grander scale, but it seems to be more accessible than other work I've written in the past. And so I think this is, with this play, I think it's sort of benchmarky for me. I'm really excited about it,
Great.
Actually. And then whatever comes down the pike, I don't know. I would like to be wonderfully financially secure and all those things.
Well, I'm sure... some films will come your way.
That would be nice.
Or some offers.
Yeah. Those things are happening and stuff like that.
Good,
too, so
because that's usually the home run financially, right?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, health and happiness for my family and those sort of things always first and foremost.
Well, great. You've had a good run. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, folks, for listening. And remember, go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of June 2nd, 2008. The Neo Futurists have announced their 20th anniversary season, which will include Fake Lake, starting on August 14th. It's a coming-of-age story about a young woman on a camping trip to a man-made lake. After that is a very neo-futurist Christmas Carol that opens on November 20th. It's Dickens' famous tale, told by the Grim Reaper. After that will be Beer. That starts on January 29th. It's where singing puppets tell the story of the land of beer. Sounds good. Closing up the season will be TML 20, that can be seen starting on April 16th. To celebrate the 20th anniversary of Too Much Light, the Neo-Futurists are going to present a special run of Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind at the Theater on the Lake. They will also continue their signature 30 plays in 60 minutes that has been performed since 1988, and is in fact the longest running production in Chicago history. Straw Dog Theater Company in Lakeview has announced their 21st anniversary season. The company that presents The Whole Wide World in a Little Black Box opens its season with Karel Čapek's classic R.U.R. That's right, the play that first introduced the word robot can be seen starting on September 18th. Next is Arthur Miller's celebrated classic American drama, All My Sons, that starts on February 19th. The season will close with British playwright Peter Barnes's Red Noses. That show opens on April 16th. Straw Dog Late Night will continue throughout the season. It'll feature a variety of shows all year long in their newly renovated space. For more information, visit strawdog.org or click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. Steppenwolf Theater Company concludes its 32nd season with Superior Donuts. The show is written by ensemble member and Pulitzer Prize winner Tracy Letts. The production will start on June 19th at the Steppenwolf. Superior Donuts is a world premiere comedy that stars Michael McKean, who owns a decrepit donut shop in the uptown neighborhood of Chicago. Superior Donuts starts soon. Don't miss it. Golda's Balcony is extended through the end of June. That's right, this Jeff-recommended production officially opened on May 5th and will now continue all the way through June 29th. Golda's Balcony stars Janet Ulrich Brooks and is currently running at the Pegasus Players. For more information, click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Now Playing section. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Brett Nevue for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.